Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today, back for the second time, KPI specialist Bernie Smith. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Rob. Thanks ever so much for having me along again.
Well, we had unfinished business last time, Bernie. So you are a KPI specialist. Just explain to the audience what that actually means.
So what it means is I help organizations of all shapes and sizes turn their dreams and aspirations, or strategic objectives as we call them, into practical results by using well-designed performance measures that tell them whether they're heading in the right direction, where they've got problems, what those problems are, and where they're doing things right. So it's all about building a bridge between the senior team, the IT people and the business people, and saying, right, can we agree on what we should measure and how we should review it and use it?
And one of the benefits of using KPIs in business, presumably the obvious one in my mind, is you get your strategy right, so you know where you're going.
Absolutely. If you don't use KPIs, then effectively you're guessing. Right. And it's just like driving along a road and deciding to shut your eyes. You may be okay for a while, but at some point you're going to drive off the edge of the road. And for me, KPIs are like having your eyes open and a clear windscreen. Mm. You can see what's coming. You can also look out and see what's gone, and it gives you a chance to act and respond on what's happening around you. If you take something like a submarine, they haven't got a windscreen, but you know, when you drive a submarine, you are completely dependent on data, and you wouldn't imagine trying to steer a submarine without lots and lots of information. So why would you steer your business without using good quality information?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And accountants, do they themselves use KPIs a lot, or do they utilize them more as a business advisory tool to help their own client?
I think it differs by individuals. You know, there are some people who seem to be wired for performance measurement and do it instinctively. So my kids always mock me. All my drawers behind me are labeled. That's in my nature. So I think some accountants naturally gravitate towards their own KPIs, but there's increasing demand, increasing interest in KPIs that many of my accounting clients are now responding to. People looking at the broader business, not just the financial side, and saying, how do we know we're on track? How do we drive growth? How do we drive sales? How do we drive innovation? And it's those questions that are coming up that are prompting some of my accounting related clients to come to me and ask for some help and some guidance and a framework, you know, a structured method.
And you do have a method, don't you? You call it the ROCKS method.
Yeah, exactly. So ROC stands for Results Orientated KPI System, and it's all about working backwards from the end result that you want. So the example I used in the last podcast was, it's like deciding on what DIY job you want to do and then buying your tools, rather than going to B&Q and buying the tools and then deciding on what job you want to do. Now, the reason it came about was I was working with a banking client, and for the third time in a week, I sat down and started explaining the approach that I thought we should take KPIs. I drew a diagram, walked through it, and I thought, hang on, this is crazy. I've done it three times now. I need to write this down properly. I need to create a book. I need to create a document where I say, you know, actually, it's all in here, but I'll happily talk you through it. So it started fairly informally, and then it became sort of more and more well-defined. I'm also a big believer in not talking in generalities. So I'm an engineer by background, and I like tangible how to do it, guys. And I'm a big fan of checklists. So I read an amazing book by a guy called Atul Gawande called The Checklist Manifesto.
I did myself.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it? And I came off that and I thought, that's the way KPIs need to work. KPI design and selection. Every client's different, but fundamentally the steps you go through to choose your KPIs, I love the checklist approach because there are so many moving parts from strategy through to implementation, and it can go wrong at any point. So if we can create a structured framework for people to follow, then it greatly increases the chance of getting to the end of it without making some of the more common mistakes. So the idea was to systematize it, to make it more accessible, make it easier for people to use.
Yeah, and if people attend one of your KPI workshops or get some consulting from you and they don't get a handle on it, what's traditionally the biggest reason? What's most difficult about it?
The heart of the ROCKS process is this ability to break down strategic objectives. Now, strategy is an interesting thing because it's actually lots of different things under the same banner. So the thing that I found people have found difficult in the past is defining their strategy and then breaking it down. So what's interesting is most businesses have six core implicit strategic objectives. Whether they say it or not, these are things things like being profitable and solvent, growing, being innovative, managing risk, being compliant, and so on. So we use that as a start point. And normally when you look at an organization's strategic objectives, they're all in there, and things like quality of life as well. Some are mission-based, so they'll have an extra objective or two, you know, if they're a charity or a medical research group, something clear they're trying to do, like you know, cure cancer or whatever. So we use that as a start point, and that makes it easier because I'll stick them up and say, okay, which of these six apply to us? And that's easier than just starting with a blank sheet of paper. And the other really interesting revelation for me was strategy in most businesses is not about achieving profit or growth or whatever. It's about how we achieve those things. Okay. So that's where it gets interesting. And the example I often use is a customs agency that I work with where they did border paperwork for US-Canada border. They talked about the relationship that they had with their clients, and they talked about the fact that the clients trusted them, that the clients felt they treated their business like their own, the fact that it was frictionless, the fact they knew it was going to go right without having to check. These were the things that made the business. And they all drive profit and growth, but that was what made them special. So for me, the interesting thing was understanding that strategy is often not super high level. It's about how we do things. So that's the bit that people have found difficult in the past. Hmm. So then there's also what I call the 4 C's method, which we use for breaking those down into more granular components so that we can actually talk about what we're going to measure. So that's a bigger discussion than we can have here. But that's the bit that people find most difficult. That's what I've spent the last few years trying to simplify and systematize.
Yeah. And some of those key performance indicators you've mentioned are quite intangible. Things like innovation. And I've written down a couple more here. Culture or engagement or client experience. It is quite difficult to measure some of those things, isn't it?
Well, it is difficult to measure them directly. But this is probably one of the most interesting bits of KPI design. So these are what we call important but hard to measure KPIs. Nothing right. flashy about that. And the world is littered with them. There are ways of measuring things. So to give you an example, the British Children's Film Foundation, just after the Second World War, they didn't have much money. They were making nourishing educational films for kids, and they'd show them at the local flea pit. And they wanted to know how engaging and interesting the kids found the film. So you could do surveys, you could ask them, but that comes with all the usual problems and baggage of surveying kids. So very simply, they counted how many kids went to the toilet during the first half of the film. Oh. Because they knew that engaged kids would sit tight and stay there even if they wanted to go to the toilet. Yeah. Bored kids just go to the loo for something to do. So what they'd identified was a proxy measure, something that happens at the same time as the thing you're interested in. I mean, another example is drug researchers. And in fact, they're doing this with COVID-19 right now. Researchers into illegal drug use know from experience that asking people what drugs they've taken is fraught with inaccuracy. However, when people consume illegal drugs, your body creates metabolites that are unique to those drugs. Where do those metabolites go? They go down the drain. So if you sample sewage, you know the flow rate, you know the concentration of these metabolites, you know which drugs they come from, you can instantly estimate the amount of certain illegal pharmaceuticals that a population have taken just by sampling the sewage. So these proxy measures, these close cousins of the things you're interested in, are the secret to measuring hard to measure things. And they're everywhere. As soon as you start looking at it in this slightly different way, you realize that there is almost no such thing as an unmeasurable thing. You just maybe need to think about it slightly differently.
Yeah. Is there a way for accounting leaders? I'm just thinking of a scenario, Bernie, where they want to introduce KPIs as a vocabulary into their accounting firm to get their accountants talking about it, but they're not getting buy-in. Or an accountant might be trying to get a client to think about KPIs, but they're getting some kind of resistance. How do you start to convince them of the value of KPI?
Okay, so the way I will always start in that situation is by looking at problems. It's interesting. People think more creatively when it comes to problems. So when I'm building my KPI trees, these visual representations, I always ask people to think about how can we really mess things up? Now, because people are so much more creative when it comes to thinking about problems than they are thinking about optimal outcomes. If you've got an organization where they're struggling for enthusiasm, don't really see the value, start with a problem. So find a broad category that you're having issues with. I don't know, customer churn or rework or something like that. Then stand it on its head and say, what's the ideal outcome here? And start to build some KPIs for that particular issue. The thing with KPIs is they need to demonstrate value to people. Otherwise, they become a chore and an overhead. So pick an area where you know it's a pain point, where you think KPIs could help, and start there. And start simple and start with a light touch. As you get benefit from it, Gradually increase the sophistication, maybe broaden it slightly. Don't overdo it because you don't want it to become a tax on the business, but start with something that will deliver visible value. So the best kinds of problems to go for are the ones that cause pain, because there's two types of problems. There are big problems that exist in organizations that cause no pain at all. So for example, if you're a manufacturer and you give away too much product in your packets, it's a yield problem, but no one on the production line feels pain. You know, we just use more material than we should. So that's a non-pain problem. Go for a pain problem and work on that. Find some KPIs around that and use that as your start point.
And I'm a very visual person. I suspect others are. So we have these dashboards, don't we, that almost like the cockpit of an aeroplane, they show you very visually where you're at, what the scoreboard is. How would an accountant go about creating a simple dashboard, either for their own firm or for a client?
Okay, so the key with the dashboard is that it shows variation that is of interest. So where I've seen dashboards go wrong is that they don't move or people don't care about things that are on them. There's some quite interesting research around variable reward. So people find things much more interesting if they're a bit different when they look at them. So if you want to build engagement, look for variable reward, but also have important actionable stuff on there. So putting the UK base interest rate on there is of no relevance because you can't change it. Right. So it needs to be actionable.
Things that you can control, in effect.
Yeah, exactly. So things where I look at that and I can go and do something different. I have to say as well, from experience, now this is totally old school, but I find that whiteboards and things that people physically interact with have much higher levels of engagement than electronic boards. And I'm not entirely sure why, but they're a great way to start because people care more about the stuff they've written. It promotes much higher levels of engagement. So it's not pretty, and it certainly hasn't got any donut charts or pie charts on it, but that can work really well as well.
And how do you feel about a very crude traffic light system, red, amber, green, of here's where we're at with this. We're way behind on this. We're in the red. Do they work?
No, I have quite a strong opinion on that, which is traffic lights are really a way of taking someone's opinion and making it look like fact. And the reason is someone has decided on those thresholds, but it's not obvious what criteria were used. And the other problem I have with traffic lights is they do not show trends. So you get really interesting situations where you might have a special cause peak or trough that can turn the traffic light from green to red. And everyone knows that that thing is an exception and very brief, but it may change the traffic light. It becomes impossibly complex, really, to look at every potential trend scenario. So I'm a much bigger fan of showing the data and showing the control limits. So what's good and what's bad. So people can see if we just temporarily dipped in or whether there's an overall trend in or outside of the limits. And if we really, really want to do it rigorously, then we can use some statistical methods. So something called XMR or IMR charts will give us 99.5% confidence things have got better or got worse or have stayed the same. And I've worked with clients that have done that very, very successfully where they've got noisy data and it helps people see clearly what's going on. So if you need that kind of binary view, better, worse or the same, then I would suggest going for that approach developed by, I think, Walter Schuhart about 120 years ago. Use that approach to give you certainty rather than red, amber, green, because red, amber, green, it's often a very political process how those values have been set. Okay. And when you dig into them, you find that there isn't the rigor.
Well, we can't ignore the times that we're in, Bernie. These are COVID times. There's a global pandemic. We're in lockdown as we record this. So if we change KPI to KCI, key COVID indicators, we're seeing stats and data all over the place at the moment. Are they like KPIs?
Yes. So they are KPIs. And I think they've tested people's critical skills to the limit. You see so many things around R numbers and exponential growth and mortality rates and whatever. I get a little frustrated with how overcomplicated it has become. It's also interesting when you look at government stats, you can see many of the sort of core problems that organizations have coming up with their stats. So I'll give you one example. Belgium was perceived as having a massive problem, a much, much worse outbreak of COVID than the rest of Europe. Turns out that COVID deaths in Belgium was any death where COVID was suspected, whereas COVID deaths in the rest of Europe was only where they were diagnosed as having COVID. So we see benchmarking problems, we see high stakes measurement and lots of the techniques that I talk about being used. So, you know, I mentioned about the illegal drugs and the sewers. They're actually using that for COVID sampling. So they're looking for E. coli virus in sewage to see whether there are outbreaks happening.
But you bring up a really good point. A KPI is only as good as the data it's based on.
Absolutely. And when you've got uncertainty over testing and you have uncertainty over reporting, it's proven to be massively problematic. The only stats that I trusted at the start of the outbreak was excess deaths.
Yeah.
So how many more people are dying than we would reasonably expect at that time of year? There was so much variation in terms of people suffering from it and not getting medical help or not being tested and so on.
Now, health is at a premium, as we're discussing. Mental health others at a premium. I'm just thinking of accountants outside their work environment. There are presumably non-work KPIs that yeah. we can play around with. You mentioned in the earlier podcast about standing on the scales and measuring your weight. So can you give us an example of one or two of those that might give some peace of mind or work-life balance to some accountants listening?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. One of the exercises I use when I do my training, I do a Be Healthy KPI tree. And it's one of the examples I use to introduce the idea of KPI trees, which is this idea of breaking down a high-level but important objective into actionable things. Okay. So if we take Be Healthy...
Because that's too vague, isn't it? Be healthy or lose weight. There's no end point. There's no measurement.
Well, that's right. But it is a start point.
So that's the trunk of the tree, is it, Bernie, in your eye?
Yeah. So we have the strategy at the top and then we sort of cascade it down. So it looks like an organogram. But in the case of this example, we talk about sleeping well and on a regular basis.
Right.
We talk about relaxing and doing so on a regular basis. We talk about being aerobically fit. We talk about eating well. We talk about managing stress, maybe managing bad habits. And then for each of those, we break it down to the next level. So eating well, yes, it's about calorie intake and energy intake, but it's also about nutritional value. And then by the time we get down to that stage, we're talking about things you can actually measure. So we take it down through three levels, be healthy at the top, be aerobically fit, eat well and so on, break it down to another level, and then we get to the stage where we can actually measure things. So there's a whole movement of people who like doing stuff like this for fun called quantified self, and you'll find people out there who measure every aspect of their lives. It might surprise you, I'm not like that. I tend to just pick the odd thing that I'm interested in and focus on that, and I make sure it's stuff that I care about, but I don't go completely overboard. So I would say pick one or two things where changing it will have a big impact on you. So for me, it's things like how long a walk I go for, whether I go for a walk every day.
Could that be one?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So for me, I know that if I go out for a daily walk and if I cover at least 5 kilometers, I'll be in a much better mood and I'll sleep better that evening. So I've got a few very simple things that I track. Getting outdoors, covering 10,000 steps, they are the key levers on my harness.
Yeah.
It can get overwhelming if you try and measure every part of your life.
And there's something called micro habits I've read where they say just do 5 deep breaths a day if you can, or 5 squats or 5 push-ups, or do one thing. You go really granular on a KPI, don't you?
Yeah, it sounds a bit like the thing that Matt Mullenweg came up with. So the founder of WordPress, he always made a commitment to do 1 push-up a day.
Yeah.
And that was interesting because yes, doing 1 push-up a day will nudge the needle, but he found that once you start, then you generally carry on. So micro habits are interesting because they both have the benefit, but they also open the door to better habits.
I'm looking at your book here, Jeremy, KPI Checklist, Practical Guide and Templates, including 50 checklists. So when people read this book, what are they going to get from it?
Okay, so what you get is a story at the start about why checklists are. Talk about the basic principles of measurement. So why it's so important to start with the end in mind and work backwards from the outcome that you want. It's structured on the 7 steps of the method. So it walks through each step with just a short explanation of what the step's about, and then a how-to guide, and then things like a checklist on how to execute that step, but also how to run workshops and get engagement and how to make the KPI selection process work properly. You've also got templates as well. You get free access to the spreadsheets and PDFs that sit alongside it. So it's really a how-to kit for doing it in your own organization. It's about 3.5-hour read because no one reads something like this for fun. People want practical step-by-step guides on how to do it.
Yeah, and you mentioned their workshops. Accountants presumably can run their own workshops on KPIs. They're important for businesses to hear. It's that added value seminar, webinar type approach that creates value for them. They could get a lot from KPIs and deliver that to their clients, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. If as an accountant you specialize in a particular sector, it's a great way of building credibility. If you can be seen to be helping people across that sector with KPIs and show a deep understanding of the needs and peculiarities of that sector, then it's a fantastic way of building a strong professional reputation and being seen as value add, as an authority in your field. People are looking for help in the broadest sense, growing or protecting their businesses. I think there's a lot of people in pain out there, aren't there?
Yeah.
And they're looking for ways of securing their business.
Yeah. Well, Benny, this is terrific. If accountants want to get in touch with you to run some workshops for them, for their clients, or run some online events, or just have a conversation with you about the ways that you could help, and what's a good way for them to reach you?
Well, head to my website, madetomeasurekpis.com. I love hearing from people. It's one of the real buzzes I get from doing this, is hearing the interesting stories from people who are out there.
And would you leave us with one or two perhaps of your favorite KPIs, ones that have really worked for you or your clients that might resonate with some of the accountants listening?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. One of the slightly unusual KPIs I use on my own business is lifetime value of activity. So I've got an unusual unusual mix of work. So I do client build work, I do workshop delivery, I also write books. And it became obvious to me that if I valued my book writing time on what I earned that year for it, I'd never write any books. So I came up with a lifetime value estimate of the activities so that I could compare apples with oranges. And that really changed the way that I looked at it. In terms of client ones, gosh, the most interesting strategic objective that a client came up with was one from a client in Vancouver. And their objective was, we never give a client a reason to leave us. It was just a fantastic insight that created an avalanche of really interesting KPIs, because they realized that their business depended on people never getting annoyed, never finding a problem, never being given a reason to look elsewhere. And from that, it completely transformed their thinking.
Well, Bernie Smith, in turn, that's been really interesting from you. Thanks so much for your insights on KPIs today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me along again, Rob. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.